And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
At this point, I think since I've been in the league, it's always been dialogue about, me versus my teammates, like me versus Russell, me versus Steph and Draymond, me versus Kyrie now, and James. And a lot of people, when Golden State won, it felt like they went back and said, well, if they won this one, then they could have easily won 2017, 2018 with somebody other than KD. But I'm just like, why? Somebody other than me. Like, why you want to just pull me from the group? You know what I'm saying? So it'd be irritating to hear that because I just want to watch the game. And I also like those dudes. Like, I played basketball with those guys. And I was a part of that dynasty that they're building right now. And I didn't think they had a dynasty until right now.
This is Nerdish, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello, and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Free Agency Day. I'm Dave Dufour, joined as I am every single week on Nerder, She Wrote, by Seth Partnow and Mo DeKeel. What's up, guys? Kind of a, I'm not going to call it boring, because it certainly is not a boring day, but the free agent signings have not been monumental, let's say.
It's been a boring day. Besides the big news, it's been a boring day besides that.
I just want to say, Dave, in honor of the day, you should have started talking before you actually started recording. Because everything else is happening before it should today, so, why not?
There is absolutely no way the Knicks are dodging tampering charges, correct? Like, it's just impossible.
No, they're meeting. They're meeting now. They're meeting.
It's amazing.
They lose a second round pick. Oh, woe is me.
Haven't the Knicks traded away all their second round picks anyway?
What are you going to do? Like somebody was saying that about the Clippers. I'm like, what are they going to do? Take the Clippers pick away from Oklahoma City? Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you're not going to have actual penalties with tampering, it doesn't matter. Away, folks.
We've known this was happening for about, 5 months. So congratulations to the Knicks. Let's start with
the big news.
Yeah, let's start with the big news, guys. Of course, news out of Brooklyn today, because nothing was happening in the NBA. Nets star Kevin Durant has requested a trade. And this has just been building for a little bit. Obviously, we went through the entire Kyrie Irving saga before the opt-in, and he dared to be different here, Seth, and opted in. And now KD is asking out. Apparently, they're both going to be gone. Seems like the Nets, this is over. And we have a whole situation on our hands,
they,
guys.
And they traded a first-round pick next year for Royce O'Neal.
Royce O'Neal, who would be a good player to have next to KD and Kyrie.
And re-sign Patty Mills, who would be a good –
I think Patty Mills is the Ben Simmons whisperer.
Yeah, this has some time to play out, so I don't want to – like, there are ways this could play out that it's salvaged. So I don't want to, get too far ahead until we see it all the way play out.
But and this I should note well. That we're recording Thursday evening. So, stuff may continue to come, down the news pipeline as we're recording.
To timestamp it, Kevin Knox just got $6 million. That's where we are in real time.
Followed by Gary Harris getting a nice little 26 million or whatever that was.
So, guys. So let's go back to the Nets. It's a mess. But the Nets actually have an extremely valuable asset here in Kevin Durant. So they're going to be fielding trade offers, and they should get something good out of this. Maybe a chance to undo some of the future damages that they've done to their asset chest in the trade for James Harden, where they've essentially given up control of their draft picks for
It's amazing that a different Nets regime has made the same mistake that the other Nets regime made. Like, it's I get it. And Seth, you can make all the faces, but it's a similar mistake. You basically made a massive trade, gave all your draft equity away, and now you're sitting here with they're going into next season with nothing. Let's just be honest.
So the one difference is at least they were really good. The last one they did all that to sneak into the playoffs, and then everyone fell apart age wise. So and because of that, as Dave is alluding to, they did reasonably well in recouping some of the value for Harden in the Simmons trade. I think they're going to do, depending on which direction they go, I think they may not get dollar for dollar, but they'll get something back on the Durant part of it. So it's not like the Nets situation post the Garnett trade was the worst team building situation in the salary cap era. I haven't researched this, but I'm going to make that statement.
Well, let's kind of look at the Nets just from a bigger picture sort of thing, like we do here. What does this say about team building, Mo, in the modern NBA? Because it just seems like the personalities are combustible, and it's harder and harder to gauge chemistry ahead of time.
I think teams have to start thinking a little bit differently in terms of how they go about business. And I think you got to look at it as maybe we shouldn't chase stars, right? Like, this is becoming a very challenging scenario here. And yeah, look, Seth, you're right. Like, hey, and if there was no vaccine mandate, probably wouldn't have any of this problem. Or if Kyrie decided to take the vaccine, probably really wouldn't have these issues. But that's not the reality we live in. But you're almost like and I know I said it here on this podcast before, but the Nets built a culture and threw it away for Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant the first chance they get, which, by the way, every team would have done. I'm not just crushing the Nets on that, but it's just the concept of you went chasing for stars, you turned your organization over to them, and now you're getting bit in the ass with it. It's not like, it's every decision they made after that were all bad decisions for the most part. You know, a couple stuff here and there. Okay, that's fine. That's marginal. But everything was based on what those guys wanted, and it's bit them in the ass. And you look at who won the championship this year, a team that's homegrown. The team they beat, another homegrown team. You know, and I'm not saying there's only one way. You got to be, all these teams got to be homegrown, but you got to be smart about how you're building it. I really think front offices and teams in general are going to have to start rethinking this a little bit. And it's not just, hey, let's just go get the biggest possible stars we can and hope it all works out.
So it's no longer one weird trick to win you an NBA title. And this is touching on something that I think Hollinger wrote about this during the playoffs, and we've talked about this. I like Mo, and I think we'll get to it later if we talk about some of the signings. But because playoff basketball is becoming, it's becoming almost as much, not as much, but a lot more about who the worst guy is on the floor than the best guy. It's not enough to simply, we got this. Well, we got these two stars. We'll roll out. We'll fill, veterans will come sign for us. And then what invariably happens is the stars pick the veterans and they pick guys who are good 4 years ago. And, and so those guys aren't good enough. And so I think it's much more, it's not the one weird trick. It's, you got to make you do have to get the top end players. Like, I don't think that's changed. But you have to do that, and you have to put yourself in position to make all these other decisions well, to put the pieces around them, to keep the team together without blowing up your cap book. And so it is both the big and little things. And I think a lot of the problems we're seeing are, well, we did the big thing, I guess we're done here, we don't have to pay attention anymore. And then that does stuff like, I don't know, not being able to sign your second round draft picks to more than 2 years. And then you put yourself in a position where Alex Caruso walks, because we'll get there. But this is what I'm talking about, is like, that stuff matters more now because the league is much more competitive.
And it's just, but it's just not thinking about it, right? It's like after you get the star move, it's not thinking of what's the next move. You know, it's just assuming the work is done now. And that's the biggest mistake. The hardest thing, I was with the Clippers when we had Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. The hardest thing for us after that was finding the pieces we needed in between to make everything else work and get going. And I think that's the biggest challenge with these things. And I think that's the mistake a lot of these front offices are doing.
Yeah, no, I think, I would throw JJ Redick in there with that squad as well. But yeah, that fifth spot in any bench was just never there with those teams. By the way, breaking news, Timberwolves are signing Kyle Anderson.
Right. Yeah. I like that actually. DeAndre Jordan is the guy that they signed with KD and Kyrie. Like that was a classic example of the veterans that the Stars choose aren't necessarily like, I mean, Nick Claxton was a better player, I think, the day they signed DeAndre Jordan.
No, Jared Allen.
Jared Allen. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Jared Allen. Sorry. Not Claxton. Although Claxton was too. Yeah. He might've been, you know, in high school, but I do think that the problem started there and in team building. Now it seems like you're better off and they were, and Brooklyn was almost there trying to only do two stars and then higher end complementary role players. But it's just an impossible task when the personalities are like this. That's the issue, right? This has nothing to do with talent, has nothing to do with fit. I mean, these guys are really good when they're able to play basketball together, but you have one guy who's coming back off injury and looks incredible. And you know, we all agree, Kevin Durant, I'm assuming he's in a tier one, Seth.
Yeah. I can spoil that. Yes. Kevin Durant is in tier
one. Yeah. Not a hot take. And Kyrie is a fantastic basketball player when he plays. But again, I mean, the personalities matter. So I want to talk about Steve Nash because we discussed this when they hired Nash to coach the team. And we talked about some of the things we thought Nash was good at and some of the things that, I don't know, I think he struggled a little bit. Would a more experienced coach have, I don't know, maybe he would have made this a little bit better, or is it just you can't really coach stars in the league?
I mean, I don't think it's not you can't coach stars. There's some, like, you know, let's be honest. There's one individual here that just
we don't have to dance around it. You can't coach Kyrie.
Yeah,
let's just be honest. Yeah. The dude's just unreliable.
Yeah, I think that. I think
we don't need to dance around it. The dude just decides, hey, I want to take PTO because it's near my birthday. I'm going to take a few days off. Like there's no real way to actually like. I wasn't a fan of the Nash hiring. I was critical of it, and I thought Nash did a better job than I thought. But ultimately. Like, I don't look at any coach who's going, sign me up, let me coach Kyrie.
I mean, we're going to get to this in a few minutes when we talk about his value around the league in a potential trade. But, I mean, that's the truth, right? Like, the problem that they're running into right now is that they also need to move Kyrie. And it seems like that's going to be a steep hill to climb.
Like, who wants to sign up for that day-to-day? This is a, you know, 24/7 job for 10 months of the year. And I just like dealing with that. Like, I think that's their season was fine when he just like, okay, he's off doing whatever he's doing. We're getting to work. They were fine. They were good. They were leading the East. They were looking great. Now a couple injuries, they get some COVID, they panic, I think, and say, you know, whether this was management, whether this was Durant, whether this was Nash, they panic and like, oh man, we need some reinforcements. So bring this guy back. And then that's, you know, you don't want to, you know, post hoc here, go prompter hoc, but that's a line in the sand for their season where really good disaster after that.
We're going to take a quick break. And after we come back, we're going to talk about potential landing spots for Kevin Durant.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Durant made his trade request, and he listed a couple of teams that he was interested in. The Miami Heat and the Phoenix Suns. And Mo, you've been working the trade machine. We've been talking all day, basically, since the trade request came out. The Phoenix thing makes sense. I mean, look, Kevin Durant on either of those teams instantly makes them, you know, finals favorites, maybe.
He makes 90% of the, like, he makes most of the league title favorites, or any of the teams that are kind of contenders or close. He makes them title favorites. He's a freaking unbelievable player. Like, I love watching KD play. You know, it's there are challenges for both of those teams to trade for him. I think the obvious one for Miami is, listen, Tyler Hero, Kyle Lowry, and Duncan Robinson, and whatever picks you want to throw in there is not getting it done. You'd probably got to include
Bam. I would hope not. I would certainly hope not.
No, it won't. They're not going to.
And I hang up as soon as I hear, no, we're not having that.
No, but I mean, like, you know, but they can't include Bam because of the designated rookie contract rule, because they've already traded for Ben Simmons. You can't trade for two of those types of contracts, for those that don't know. And so now, so Bam's out. So they can't trade for Bam.
Unless they trade Simmons again.
Unless they trade Simmons again.
Which, who the hell is doing that? You know, but now it becomes super complicated just on that end for Miami. Now you look at Phoenix, and the most obvious thing, because this was what I was on, the train I was on till a little bit later, but was, sign and trade for Ayton. Throw in whatever. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, both of them, whatever. Throw in picks. Make that happen. But then the Nets go and re-sign Nick Claxton for 2 years. So I don't think they have any interest in DeAndre Ayton. So now it's a matter of trying to find a home for DeAndre Ayton, you know, and almost like a three-team trade. Let me just put it this way. I'm spending way too much time on a trade machine right now.
For free agency day, for sure. But free agency is kind of dead. This is how it works. So it seems like, I mean, the Nets theoretically have all the leverage. He's under contract. He's got 4 years left. But there is absolutely no way he's getting moved to a team that he doesn't approve. I just don't see him. You know, this is not a Kawhi situation to me. How do you guys, I mean, can you see a scenario where he gets sent to Oklahoma City for a bunch of draft picks and Chet? I mean, that's unrealistic, but somewhere he doesn't want to be. I don't think this league would suffer that at this point.
I mean, I think you could. It's almost easier to sell it on the 1 year, because it's like, okay, Kawhi, give us a good year. We're going to go after this title, and then, you know, we'll do it. Then do what you got to do.
Whatever happens, happens. Yeah, right.
Yep. So it's not that. So, I mean, I think it's, I mean, for, at this point, by the way, I you know, to editorialize a little, I don't think making KD a villain is totally fair at this point. Now, if he's like completely unreasonable, it's like, oh nope, trade me to Miami no matter what, and it's like, well, but there's, we can't trade you to Miami.
You can't do it.
Yeah, we can't. Right. Well, I'm only going to Miami. Well, then we can talk, and then like that, just like, you know, big picture, that blows the league up, because like lockout city. If you signed a 4-year contract and then you took your ball and went home. Like, the Simmons thing was bad enough, and now if one of the top five players in the league does that, we got problems. But I do think that, like, you know, I would imagine you could talk him into a wider range of teams than just those two. But it's going to have to be a championship-level team.
Yeah, and it should be. Like, he should be demanding to go to a championship-level team in that instance. I will find it interesting. I think the scope's going to widen. I think, you know, the window for those two teams to make a move was really small. Like, in Miami and Phoenix, to make the move, I felt like they would have had to do it very quickly. I think we're going to see a lot of interesting teams. I think, you know, New Orleans might be a team that throws their hat in the ring there a little bit, and they have a ton of assets. I think, you know, Memphis could be a really interesting team. I think there's a lot of areas to look that I think can make it interesting. I think you could use Indiana as a filler, as a third team to try to help send pieces elsewhere and things like that. I think there's going to be some stuff where I think you're looking at it, and I think we're going to find a very interesting trade. But this is it's a tough spot. I mean, it's a big blow for the Nets, obviously, but I mean, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up and how they get there.
I'm still just so confused about it. Like, I'm still very confused by the Royce O'Neal thing, because like this didn't come out of left field. And okay, I'm just like,
it doesn't make much sense. But the truth is, there's no incentive for the Nets to tank at all next year. They don't own their picks. They need to, I guess, try to make the playoffs. So, you know, Mo is throwing out Malcolm Brogdon in three-team trades here, trying to get him to Brooklyn. I think that sounds right up their alley. I think that they're going to also try to do some picks and do some pick swaps, but they need players who can actually play.
I'm also going to push back on they don't want to tank. Sometimes you don't want to tank. You just can't help it.
Yeah, you're going to tank
anyway.
You're
going to be, like, you're just that bad. And I think that's just the situation. Good on Houston. Houston's going to control their draft. Like, for me, if I'm Brooklyn, I'm going, like, I'm just trying to get draft assets back, so we're just not completely bare as we were before. And I think that's going to be their biggest challenge. And I think that's something that they're going to have to figure out, like, in this trade process with KD and probably Kyrie right after that.
Okay. So we kind of understand that Kevin Durant has a robust trade market. But a guy you mentioned as a potential trade piece for Phoenix, DeAndre Ayton, I have no read on what his market is. And this was a guy who did not get a max extension that I think we all thought was going to happen. And clearly things fell apart from a relationship standpoint there toward the end. And now it seems like things are dried up for DeAndre Ayton.
The biggest problem here, I thought, like, I did not think Phoenix should have given the max extension before the season. The biggest problem is what you said is, like, that puts you in a situation where you have to manage the relationship, and that really seems like that was not done well. And now you're sort of in a situation where they're probably market-wise in position to squeeze, but the players already sort of agitated and unhappy, and, you know, having just got done talking about what bad vibes can do to an otherwise very good team, I think, you know, that's the, like, so okay, they somehow come back and it's like he gets a, you know, five for, you know, he gets like the John Collins contract or something like that to come back. That's not going to be a happy place in a team that's already, like, agitated about the way their season ended. Like, that has powder keg potential.
It's amazing how quickly the market dried up on him, though. And I mean, like, within hours. I don't know if I've ever seen it dry up that quickly. In the sense of, like, a week ago, oh, I thought Detroit was going to make a run at him. I thought maybe San Antonio was going to make a run at him. Like, there were different areas. I thought, okay, like, that's at least two teams right there. Like, boom. And before the free agency hour hit, not that it matters for anybody because we discussed tampering. it didn't seem, I was just so confused. No idea where he's going to go. Now Brooklyn's off the table with them taking Claxton.
But
so
they were signing a trade. His agent was scrupulously not taking meetings until, you know, an hour and a half ago. So, you know, he was
like,
that's what happened, right?
I mean, yeah. Like his agent stuck behind the rules there of, hey man, 6 PM Eastern, we're not taking meetings till then. But I think ultimately it's amazing to see that. And now I just don't know where he ends up. And it's set to your point. Like, I don't think he can go back to Phoenix. I mean, the comments Monty Williams made after the game 7 and things like that, like that bridge is burnt to me. And I don't feel like there's they sign him and stuff. And sure, like they'll probably find hope to trade him. Look at how well that's worked for Atlanta, who's been trying to trade John Collins since as soon as the ink dried on that contract. Like, I think it's really just kind of shocking. And I've been asking you guys, I'm asking other people. I have no idea where DeAndre Ayton ends up. Like, I don't know who has the interest for that. That's and the money to go get him.
And the restricted free agency part of this allows Phoenix to just kind of hang out.
It doesn't. Because the big thing is, if they don't want him to walk for nothing, they can't let him sign a contract. They can't let him sign a term sheet. If they're going to do a sign and trade, they have to be the proactive ones in that. They can't do that once he signs an offer sheet from whoever, Sacramento or wherever. Then it's just two options. Let him walk for nothing or match the contract. And I think that's the decision where we're going to head off to. But I just don't know where that contract's coming from.
We all need Vivek Ranadive to just go completely wild card here, maybe throw an offer, big offer at DeAndre Ayton, maybe throw out a huge trade offer for KD. Just let's just, you know, take a swing for the fences. We're going to come back after the break and kind of talk about some of the teams that we didn't necessarily like from free agent signing day. All right, guys, here's a little segment in honor of Seth called What Are We Doing Here? The Knicks they moved heaven and earth for Jalen Brunson. And Jalen Brunson's a nice player. It's a lot of money, guys. What do you think about the Knicks making Jalen Brunson this sort of a priority?
I wish people could see the video right now.
It's okay. So let's preface this whole segment. We need to preface by there's something preparatory. So if you're signing guys in free agency to that middle tier, kind of basically above the taxpayer, but certainly above the full MLE to the max, those contracts are usually underwater the moment you sign them. That's just the nature of the beast. Depending on you know what the market looks like, there's about you're paying about 30% more kind of per win, if you want to boil it down to that, in that sort of mid tier. And there's reasons for that, and if you want to know why, read my book. So you know, saying, oh, that's too much money for this guy, for that guy, whatever. No, that's just kind of the game you're playing. The issue here is, first of all, it's too much money for a guy who's been fine. He's been good. Is he the 75th best player in the league? Is he the 60th best player in the league? Is he ever going to be an all-star? Is he ever going to sniff an all-star team? I don't think so. So, okay, you spend a little too much for that. That's fine. You got your guy, whatever. But then the on top of that, you're moving assets to do it. You're trading to get off money of these other players, and it's not just the dollar amount, it's all the future stuff you're giving up, and now you're locking yourself into another big contract for a guy who is, if he performs at the level he did in Dallas in a worse environment for him to perform because their spacing is going to be crap, if he stays healthy and performs at that level and the Knicks are decent, he will perform at that contract. Everything else is downside. And the upside for the Knicks is what? They can challenge for the sixth seed with their books clogged with, you know, Julius Randle and whatever they're going to give RJ Barrett and so on and so forth. Like, John Hollinger likes to talk about going all in on mediocre. And it seems like they're in a position where they're all in and they'd be almost fortunate to get to mediocre. So I ask, What are we doing here?
Go ahead.
It's a weird trick. Like, it was a weird move. I felt like, listen, if it was Jalen Brunson and somebody, okay, now I'm more intrigued here. But it's like, if your big move was, hey, we're going to go get Jalen Brunson, what's the plan? What's the plan? You have a ball dominant guy in Julius Randle. Now you're trying to move Julius Randle, but let's be honest, nobody really wants him. And then you have, you know, RJ Barrett, who's improved, Seth's favorite player, has gotten pretty good this season. I thought he had I don't want to say a full leap, but like a half leap.
He took steps.
Not a full leap, though. I don't think. Yeah. I don't think that's fully fair. But I'm intrigued by him. I'm really excited to watch him. Those are guys that pair well with Jalen Brunson. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me in that scenario. Like, I don't understand what that piece is. And I think the ultimate thing is, when I'm watching them, I just don't see where they go now. What's the next move? You know, it was funny. I kind of just tweeted out later, like, this is fine if you have a plan. I just don't think the Knicks have a plan. Okay, we're going to go after the next guy. Like, I don't know where you're at. You're not in a position. Not like you can go get DeAndre Ayton now, right? Like, you're not in any scenario. You have Mitchell Robinson you're probably going to bring back as a restricted free agent, most is what I would guess. But, like, ultimately, I don't see where they're going with this stuff. And, Seth, like, you're right in the sense of, like, I don't know if it gets them even to mediocre.
Now, there's a team on the other side of the Jalen Brunson signing, and that's the Mavericks, who lost Jalen Brunson. They apparently made an offer, but the Knicks made an offer he couldn't turn down, like hiring his dad. So the Mavericks, they got here through their own mistakes because they didn't lock him up early. You guys like how the Mavericks have sort of responded to that? I mean, there's a Christian Wood trade where they're sending out draft picks. Feels a little short-sighted. And then today they signed JaVale McGee to the full mid-level, which sort of hamstrings their ability to round out the roster. Mo, what are we doing here in Dallas?
I mean, it's a blow for them. Obviously, like, they screwed up by never actually finding a way to extend him at the beginning of this year and getting the extension done with everything like that and end up in this scenario. But my bigger issue, I'm not as worried about them as I am, you know, losing him. I think they're going to end up signing Goran Dragic. That's going to be a done. If it's not already a done deal, it's going to be done. I think they got enough with Dinwiddie and things like that. They're just going to be mediocre. They're going to be what they were last year. I think their biggest hope and their best improvement is a in shape Luka Doncic coming into camp, like, ripped, you know, looking like he right. went through a Marvel movie or something like that and is ready to roll. And I think that's going to be their best chance of improvement. And go from there. Christian Wood's fine. Like, doesn't blow me away. Doesn't knock my socks off or anything like that. I was going to say my feet's off, but nothing really doesn't really do that. But like, it's like, it's okay. There's no move that they're making where I'm just like, wow. And losing Brunson's going to hurt. I don't think it's going to hurt as much as people will think.
So my issue here is, you ask what the plan for New York was. These moves individually, maybe, maybe not. It just collectively, like, okay, you think you're good enough to trade draft picks for Christian Wood, but you don't want to spend too much on Jalen Brunson. So you let him go. Now you're not good enough anymore. But then you sign a guy who's going to be 37 to like a 3-year contract to a guy at the end of it is going to be 37 and give him a player option to be your starting center for a guy who's been a nice, you know, a nice energy backup guy. But while you already have, you know, you already have Dwight Powell, you already have Maxi Kleba, like, it's the combination of all this just does not, it doesn't, the left and right hands just don't seem to be working together here. And if you make the Wood trade and then are surprised by the Brunson, like, signing with New York, what are you doing? And if you make the trade knowing he's leaving, what are you doing? Because why are you trading draft picks knowing you're probably going to take a step back? It's weird.
Philly, we have a problem.
No, you don't.
What are we doing here?
Well, no, you don't. You're just trying to live in the
Rockets.
Past.
We're putting the Rockets back together, guys. The Philadelphia 76ers brought PJ Tucker and Daniel House, getting the gang back together. They're gonna apparently they're gonna re-sign James Harden to a reduced value contract, not a max, so that they could bring these guys in, build the team up. I don't know, Mo. Does bringing in PJ Tucker move the needle for you? Like, does rebuilding the 2018 Rockets do anything for you?
No, it's dumb. I'm sorry. Listen, I like PJ Tucker. He's 37 right now. You're signing him to a 3-year deal for $33 million. Like, he barely made it through the playoffs this year, and he really fell hard the last four games of the conference finals. And yeah, he's banged up and injured. You feel like that's better? That's going to be something you're going to be able to fix in Philly? Like, it doesn't make sense to me why Daryl Morey feels like he needs to bring the gang back together for one last job. Like, I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. I like the DeAnthony Melton move they made. I thought that was a great pickup for them on draft day. I thought that was solid. And now we're just going to get older. We're not really going to be that much better. They signed Daniel House. Okay, that's fine. Like, I just feel like you're honestly just wasting Embiid's time with this roster. Like, this is a joke to me. I don't feel like you've gotten better that much. I don't feel like you've really improved in a way that's lifted this team up into, hey, we're going to be contenders next year. They're just going to be fine. They're going to be a threat. And as long as Embiid's healthy, they're always going to be in the mix, but they're going to fall short. I just think this doesn't make sense to me of let's bring back all the Houston Rockets. It's so funny because Doc Rivers is the coach. And this is the same stuff that Doc Rivers did when he was with the Clippers. Right? Amin Al-Hassan of Metal Arc Media used to say it all the time. Doc Rivers loved guys that used to play for him beat him. You know, and I think that's exactly what Daryl Morey's doing. Guys that used to play for him, he's bringing back. I just hate it. I don't like it.
We got to see if Big Baby Davis can give him 5 minutes.
How does PJ Tucker fit with Joel Embiid?
Well, in theory, right, he stretches the floor. He'll be in the corner, three-point shooter. He can crash the offensive rebounds and things like that. Like, fine, I get that. He's 37 years old. Try to find the younger version, right? Like, try to go find those guys. Like, that's the thing. Like, you need to get younger and more athletic. Because, like, here's the thing. When I look at this team, still can't guard anybody on Boston. They can't guard any of the wings on Boston.
And Matisse Thybulle, I mean, Can he play in the playoffs, like, offensively? I think that kind of gums you up.
I don't expect Matisse Thybulle to be back.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You know, they're looking to move him, so I'll be surprised if he's actually back.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
How do you guys feel? Do you guys feel like Embiid is going to be able to facilitate from the post the way that he was pre-James Harden last year? because I just don't see that, like, there's just not enough movement.
I mean, that's coming that, in, I mean, that's the right? big thing is, like, actually, like, to his credit, PJ Tucker did play on the move more in Miami. Now, if he's not having to get on the scale every day in Philly like he was in Miami, if he can still do that again is a question, I would say, given that he's 37. But yeah, no, he's a guy who, especially if he's playing with James Harden, he is like, you know, he is the peg stretching the tent all the way to the corner. He's just there in the corner or the whole time on offense. So, you know, with, okay, Embiid can catch the ball at the elbow, turn and face, and there'll be eight guys staring back at him because Harden will be back at half court with his guy, and everyone else is just going to be staring straight at him, looking at him. And it's like, yeah, maybe he can do something from there, but it's not like there's going to be obvious plays to be made. He's going to have to just then create everything from scratch, which he can do, but you would prefer to minimize the amount he has to do that.
I just don't like what they're putting together there. I just don't get it. You know, and I know a lot of teams were interested in PJ Tucker and making that run at him. And to be honest, I would have looked at last year and just kind of been like, yeah, he shot the hell out of it, but he also kind of struggled to stay healthy and things like that. I would just have a hard time feeling like I'm going to give him a 3-year deal. Like, he's going to be 40 at the end of this. Like, what are we doing?
And already, like you said, already wasn't moving all that great toward the end of the season and look kind of rough in the playoffs. And finally, guys, I want to talk about a deal that happened a couple days ago or yesterday. DeJounte Murray traded to the Hawks. The defensive guard that they've been looking for to pair with Trae Young, they give up future firsts and a swap to the Spurs. The Spurs going full tank mode for Victor Wembanyama. Very, very obviously. How do you guys feel about DeJounte?
I just want to be clear, because I know how Mo feels about this, but I want to be clear. We're drawing a line under what are we doing here, and this is just Mo pumping the brakes, not a full what are
yes,
we doing
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This isn't – we don't hate this. Yeah, 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 sorry. This is really a what are we doing here? This is interesting. Yeah. Go ahead, Mo.
No, I feel like everybody kind of went ballistic, right? The trade happened. And everybody was like, the Hawks got so much better. And I think they improved immensely defensively. I have a lot of questions what's going to happen for them offensively, because I don't think DeJounte Murray pairs very well with Trae Young in the offensive court. I think Trae Young's got to commit to being an off-ball guy. And everybody who's like, okay, he's going to do it now. Okay, but he didn't do it when he had Bogdanović. And I thought Bogdan Bogdanović is a better offensive player than DeJounte Murray, and I feel like he could do more of that stuff, but Trae Young wasn't willing to. And to just kind of throw it out there, like, I looked at synergy just to make sure I wasn't going crazy and looked at the regular season numbers in the playoffs. According to synergy, 50.7% of Trae Young's play types, pick and roll. After that, isolation 16.3, transition 13.7. Then after that, 7% spot up, which is basically 157 possessions for entire regular season and playoffs, 3.6 in handoff, so it's not like he starts off ball and then comes back to it that often, 26 plays off of screens. He's going to change? Like, we just think it's just going to happen that easily? And then even if he does, he's small, man. He's not as big as Steph Curry, right? Like, he's what? 6 feet. He's listed as 6'2". Let's be honest. He's 6 feet and 150 pounds soaking wet. He's going to get pushed around trying to run off screens and things like that. Like, it's really hard to be that off ball constant movement guy in the way that Steph Curry is. Like, he makes it look easy and we kind of give him a ton of credit for it, but it's hard. And I don't think it will only work if he's going to be that guy and be effective being that guy. I have a lot of doubts he's going to be that guy.
Even if he just relocated after he gave the ball up. Right. Like, he doesn't have to run off screens like Steph Curry. He doesn't have to set screens like Steph Curry. If he just made a pass, moved away, made a pass, came back to the ball. That's it. Like, it's not even that complicated. And then when you have a guy, I mean, the more he moves, the more impactful DeJounte Murray can actually be on offense, because Trae Young has gravity and he can have gravity away from the ball if he would go play there. And DeJounte, when he gets middle, that's pretty potent. And if you get some shooters out there, I mean, listen, I happen to like John Collins a lot. If he's out there, you've got a couple of guys who can, you know, run pick and roll. You got Collins who can pick and pop. I mean, this guy is, I mean, it's a 40% 3-point shooter. You know, they've got pieces where it could work, but you're right, Mo. It is all about Trae Young.
I also think they're not done. They have they have too many dudes right now. They have too many guys. They need to, you know, whether it's you know, Kevin Huerter or DeAndre Hunter or, you know, Collins and Capella to try to get a big or something like that. Like you know, Capella's great, but or fine, he works well with them. But yeah, I just feels like there is one more move for them to make, and I think I agree with Mo's overall point. This makes them like incrementally better. I don't think it's a sea change better. And you know, for what they gave up, it's one of those things that's probably fine. But the downside, given that these are some unprotected picks, like I thought San Antonio did a nice job actually like laying the groundwork, because of all the reaction, we're like, that's all. It's like. Like they got a ton, but because San Antonio had allowed it to be out there that their asking price was just astronomical. It seems like this was modest when I think it was probably still a mild overpay for Atlanta.
I mean those picks being unprotected are huge. And I am going to hit the Spurs here a little bit though too though. I hate the fact that they're tanking. I hate it. Right? Like you had DeJounte Murray. I think you had the cap space to go after DeAndre Ayton. I think that's a very interesting young team in the Western Conference right there. And, you know, whatever their calculation is and the extra 4 or 5% to get Wembanyama. Did I say it correctly?
Wembanyama.
Okay, close enough.
I believe.
You know, but like I'll work on it for next draft show. The ultimate thing is I feel like that's just a gamble. I hate tanking. I think this is I hate that they did that. So, you know, like they got a bunch of picks out of it. Great. Good for them. Like there is no guarantee they're going to be in the top three. So whether it's for Victor or whether it's for Scoot, I don't think they're still in that tough spot.
Let me ask you guys a question real quick. Hindsight, obviously, is 2020. But this package, would this have made an interesting package to Brooklyn? You know, I've thought about this a little bit. Like, did Atlanta take themselves out of a potential KD trade to get DeJounte Murray? Now, you can't, obviously, they didn't know KD was going to ask for a trade, but I wonder if they're kind of hurting today.
because they Pop, might Pop have been able to get him. KD. Pop has coached him. Maybe it's
you're thinking.
That would be. That would be funny if San Antonio just turned around and just like, you know, rerouted. I just want, like, to Mo's point. I mean, I think we do have to consider whether they probably know whether Ayton had any interest in going there. And I think that has to be considered.
I bet he has interest now with nobody willing to throw a cough up the max right now.
Yeah.
They could still be pretty okay. They sign Ayton and pick up a few, I guess, here and there. They'll still be solid. Like it's not like they were, even with Murray, they were, you know, pretty middling last year. Like I don't think they you know, especially once New Orleans got their stuff together, like they weren't really on track to do anything.
They're a 34 win team, and the West is probably going to be harder next year. So, all right. So I think that's a good place to stop, guys. Obviously, there's going to be more signings. There's going to be a Kevin Durant trade. There's probably going to be a Kyrie Irving trade. This is shaping up to be
at least two emergency podcasts. Yeah, folks, at some point on the Athletic Podcast.
4th of July
Network.
Fireworks all weekend long
from the road.
In the NBA.
Call me from the road.
That's going to be on the road. And we're all heading to Vegas next week. So, you know, you'll hear a lot more from us. Keep it locked in to the Athletic NBA Show, Daily Ding for all your emergency updates. And of course, we'll have the Saturday Slam and Jam coming out this weekend. For Seth and for Mo, I'm Dave. Thank you guys for listening to Nerder. She wrote on the Athletic NBA Show.
So yeah, I had some pride, like, damn, I'm a part of something special. Even though, you know, it was only two championships out of four, it's like, shit, JaVale McGee probably felt the same way I did. David West probably felt the same way I did. You know, we all came in at the same time with the Warriors, and we had some amazing times. And to see them finish it and continue it, you have a sense of pride within us to be a part of that within us. And then you listen to the broadcast, it's just like, well, KD should be feeling this way. I'm just like, oh, here we go. Yeah, let me just enjoy it.